Welcome to another edition of the Media Monitor podcast, where we analyze news and events the mainstream media won't report or misreport. Today, my guest is Tom Paulkin, a veteran of the Nixon and Reagan administrations and former state chairman of the Texas Republican Party. He currently serves as the chairman of the Texas Workforce Commission. He also recently authored a book called Bringing America Home, How America Lost Her Way and How We Can Find Our Way Back. Tom, welcome to Media Monitor.
Good to be with you.
Well, let me just start right from the beginning. Why did you write this book?
Well, I date myself back to the early Goldwater movement when I was a young Texan in D.C. I worked in the Goldwater for President campaign, was elected national chairman of the College Republicans even after Goldwater's defeat, running as a Goldwater conservative, and later served both on the Reagan transition team and on the Reagan White House staff, and ran a federal agency during the first Reagan term. And in the post-Reagan period of Republican politics, I saw two things happening. I saw the post-Reagan Republican leaders really squander the political capital that Goldwater Reagan conservatives had taken more than three decades to build up and move away from our conservative principles. And secondly, I saw a concern that particularly on the economic front and the foreign policy front, we were running the risk of setting America up for decline as a leader of the free world, decline in terms of economics and the growth in the private sector, particularly the manufacturing sector. And so the book really is how America lost her way and how we can find our way back. The first part of the book lays out what went wrong in that post-Reagan period of American politics and what we need to do to bring the country back and get this the ship of state going in the right direction again.
Well, one thing I thought was interesting near the beginning of the book is that you talked about how you came to Washington in 1961 to attend Georgetown, but you really weren't conservative when you arrived. I mean, what happened?
Well, I guess I considered myself as a kid Texas Democrat, but I read a book called The Conscience of a Conservative by Barry Goldwater, another book called Up from Liberalism by Bill Buckley, and I guess I was hooked. I mean, I began to believe that the conservative principles were the right principles for this country, and really were based on the founding principles of our nation. And I thought I was joining the losing side, quite frankly, when I became a Goldwater conservative, because liberalism was dominant in the United States, and even in the Republican Party, the Rockefeller crowd dominated the Republican Party, but a bunch of us came together, and it was really the grassroots up, and before we knew it, we had defeated the Rockefeller Republicans. And Barry Goldwater was nominated, and even though he lost in that election, out of that election, the most inspiring moment was the 30-minute TV address by Ronald Reagan, and it catapulted him into the leadership of the conservative movement and into the presidency 16 years later. So I thought I was doing, if you will, something which was almost a Don Quixote approach, joining the losing side. But I came to the conclusion that Me Too liberalism, as represented by Rockefeller Republicans, wasn't the solution to the serious problems America face, and was part of the Reagan movement, which ultimately came to power. And particularly in the first term, Ronald Reagan literally changed history. He got the economy moving again in the right direction. We put a policy in place to win the Cold War and defeat the Soviet Union. He got inflation under control and the private sector growing again, and even cut domestic spending in the first Reagan term. I mean, our agency, the Action Agency, now called AmeriCorps, we cut the budget by 25%, the bureaucracy in half. Our motto was doing more with less, and we were successful in that regard. And yet, from 1985, when I left, to the end of the Bush era, that agency, called AmeriCorps these days, the budget is eight times more than what it was when I left there in 85. The budget for the Department of Education, which we were seeking to cut back during the Reagan administration, from the first year George W. Bush was president until year eight, they doubled the budget with doubled the spending at the Department of Education, increased the federal mandates with the passage of the Teddy Kennedy, George W. Bush, No Child Left Behind bill, and increased the mandates, and quite frankly, it didn't help the overall situation with regard to education. So a chapter in my book is called Big Government Conservatism is an Oxymoron. It really is what we were fighting back in the early days, a watered-down version of big government liberalism, where the Republicans began to think big government was okay as long as our people were in charge of it. And that's not philosophical conservatism. So we wandered far from our principles, and we're paying a heavy price with the extraordinary debt and, of course, putting in power the most liberal regime in American history, the Obama administration, and they are simply adding to the debt. And so we've got to go back to our principles, begin to return power and money to the states, figure out how to do more with less, put an economic and tax policy in place to essentially eliminate the onerous business tax and replace it with a revenue-neutral business consumption tax, as I describe in my book. There are a whole array of conservative policies we can put in place that will begin to turn this situation around. But if we don't do something, we're going to continue to decline as a great nation.
All right, so you're talking about this whole big government liberalism and everything like that. In the book, you talk about these ballooning state budget deficits. It doesn't seem that they're really managing to make much of a dent in this. I mean, how dangerous is this for the states and for the country if they can't get this under control and really kind of trim spending?
Well, it's extraordinarily dangerous. I obviously, events since that book was written, it was published this year, but events are running so fast. I have a recent article entitled "The Government Debt Bubble is the Next Bubble to Burst," and in my book, I talk about the subprime bubble and the credit excess of the 1990s and early part of this decade. But with artificially low interest rates is what we had under Alan Greenspan and are being continued under Ben Bernanke. All we're doing is pushing the problem out for a few years and growing a bubble which ultimately will burst. As an example, Illinois recently had a budget of $30 billion, and the revenues coming in are $15 billion. That's a 50% shortfall. In addition to that, they have $5.5 billion in aged account payables. That means they haven't paid their vendors for the state, and in fact, they're giving them IOUs, which the vendors then try to take to the banks, and the banks don't want those IRUs. So this is where we're heading. It is not a matter of if the government debt bubble bursts, but when it bursts. And when you have nations like Germany and UK and Great Britain, United Kingdom actually going on austerity budgets, and we're going in the opposite direction, this is nuts. And we're going to pay a very heavy price. And the Obama administration, with their reliance on Keynesian economics, is going in precisely the wrong direction. The only real economic stimulus plan, as I point out in my book, Bringing America Home, is to grow the private sector, put Americans back to work, rebuild our manufacturing base with a tax policy that rewards savings and capital investment here in the U.S. rather than punitively taxing it and regulating it as we do under our current system.
Well, now we have the G20 summit now taking place, and there is, I guess, in principle, an agreement among the nations to cut debt and cut their deficits by 2013. Yet I think President Obama is still saying, but you got to spend. What are they going to do? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, it's unsustainable what we're doing. At some point, I mean, the Chinese are going to say, why do we keep buying American dollars? I mean, we're held hostage by the Chinese and certain other foreign nations which are buying our debt. And when does that end? And what kind of leverage do we have going to China and say, you better do this in terms of your economic policy, or you better do this in terms of your foreign policy, when they're the lender and we're the borrower? You've got to wean ourselves away from this, and there are two ways to do it. Reduce federal spending, as I point out in the book, debt to GDP, to gross domestic product in the U.S., in 1981, when I was in the Reagan administration, was 91%. In 1930, at the height of the Great Depression, it was 300%. Today, debt to GDP, consumer debt, corporate debt, and government debt is approaching 400%. And all the Obama administration is doing, while corporations are cutting back, while consumers and families are cutting back and saving more, they're going the opposite direction. And ultimately, there's going to be a day of reckoning, and I'm afraid we wind up with runaway inflation or continued depreciation of the dollar. And a sound dollar is important in order to have a sound economy, as is a good, solid manufacturing base is important for a strong economy, and yet we've lost one-third of our U.S. manufacturing base over the last decade. That's 5.5 million good American jobs which have been shipped overseas, been outsourced, or simply gone away. And again, that's something that is not irreversible, but it's as a result of a tax policy that rewards corporate debt and penalizes savings and capital investment. And the Obama administration is doing nothing to reverse that. So it's a combination of changing our tax system, completely eliminating the corporate tax system and replace it with a business revenue-neutral 8% business consumption tax, and returning power and money to the state, similar to what we did in the Reagan administration with welfare reform. Do more with less, cut spending at the federal level, and that's the combination to begin to get us out of this trap that we're in. If we continue doing what we're doing, it's just going to get worse and worse, and sometimes at some point it's going to explode. And similar to what we had in 2008, only worse, where the economy is just totally out of whack.
The conservatives have seemed to have taken hold of this, or at least maybe gotten religion all over again on spending. Do you think this is going to hold? I mean, the Tea Party movement seems to have helped fuel a lot of this anti-tax sentiment, or, you know, push the spending back, cut it back, that type of thing. Do you think the conservatives this time around have learned their lesson?
Well, I hope so. I mean, what I'm encouraged about is this grassroots phenomenon, the Tea Party and other forces of people coming back in. They're worried about the country, and they're worried about the future. That's why I wrote the book, Bringing America Home, why I came back into government when Governor Perry asked me to chair the Texas Workforce Commission, which is equivalent to our Texas Department of Labor, because I was worried about where this country was heading. And so the encouraging thing is there's a real uprising, if you will, at the grassroots level, and a lot of good people are getting engaged. The risk is that the same old Republican crowd, the Republican retreads who made such a mess of things in the post-Reagan period of Republican politics, particularly in the 8 years of George W. Bush's administration, will get back into power after 2012, and they don't acknowledge they did anything wrong. They simply think they can tinker with what they were doing before and everything is going to be fine. And that would be the tragic mistake, because I think we as conservatives and as Republicans have one more chance to fix it. And if we don't get it right the next time, the American people aren't going to trust us again. And I don't know what happens after that.
Now, you weren't afraid to name names in the book, as you talk about in the beginning about how the conservative movement has been hijacked, and you just mentioned, you know, some of the issues of the Reagan administration. You're fully supportive, I think, of the first 4 years, but there's no love lost, I guess, for his selection of George H.W. Bush, and then
well,
what happened thereafter.
I say in the book, I was all for it at the time, but the longer I saw George Herbert Walker Bush, who's a fine gentleman, the more I became convinced it was more about loyalty to the family, loyalty to the Bushes, than it was about a principled set of stances on issues. There's a quote I've got in the book from Howard Baker. You know, I've got friends who are conservatives. I've got friends who are liberals. I'm with my friends. And that, in a way, is a reflection of George Herbert Walker Bush's attitude. He doesn't want to offend anybody. And the difference between him and Ronald Reagan on key issues, Ronald Reagan was very decisive, and he was willing to get criticized for doing things that he thought were good for the long-term interest of the country. And in the George W. Bush administration, it's baffling to me why Karl Rove, who started out as a Nixon Republican, fought Ronald Reagan when he ran for president, fought conservatives in Texas, is now ostensibly a spokesman for American conservatives. Carl is a Machiavellian, very effective political operative, but he's not a philosophical conservative. And also, you shouldn't put political operatives, whether it be a Karl Rove or a Rahm Emanuel, in key policy positions in any administration. And Ronald Reagan sure didn't do it, but that happened in the George W. Bush administration. So I think a combination of the Karl Rove sort of pragmatic corporate liberals or Machiavellian politicians and the neoconservative ideologues who dominated American foreign policy during the first George W. Bush administration, they really set us up for this Obama administration coming to power. And that's the problem as I see it. And ironically, the neoconservatives, most of them were philosophical liberals who worked for Hubert Humphrey or Scoop Jackson and are really more aligned with the Great Society views of LBJ and FDR than the conservative principles of Barry Goldwater and Ronald Reagan. And particularly in foreign policy, their view has been that you can use military force to impose democracy on the Middle East. And that, to me, is as reckless as what Robert McNamara tried to do with his failed policy in Vietnam. And many of these people, like the McNamara crowd, who directed American foreign policy during the first George W. Bush administration, they were my age, but they never served in the military, much less in Vietnam. And they really didn't understand the law of unintended consequences when you go off to war.
Well, if you look forward then for a couple of years when we face the next presidential election, do you think people like this are kind of lurking, waiting for another shot at this?
Oh, sure. I think that Mitt Romney is a candidate that many of them are pushing. I knew his father, George Romney, well in the Reagan administration. He really fought conservatives throughout the Reagan administration. Mitt Romney ran as a liberal when he ran against Ted Kennedy for U.S. Senate up in Massachusetts. He was to the left of Kennedy, ironically, on the pro-life, pro-family issues. And, of course, as governor, put in really a mandated health care system, which is as much of a mess there as what we're about to see nationally with the Obama health care plan. I don't see Mitt Romney as a philosophical conservative. He's a guy who wants to be president, and yet a lot of the crowd that was in the George W. Bush administration is surrounding is working for Mitt Romney's nomination as president. So I think that would be a disastrous mistake for the Republican Party to nominate a man like him who is not a conservative, never has been.
Well, I need to bring this segment to a close, but do you have any final thoughts?
Well, I'm encouraged by what I'm seeing. I see the grassroots appearing again, a lot of people who haven't been involved for a long time coming back, and they're looking for proof. They're tired of the rhetoric because they understand there are a lot of Republicans out there who say the right things, but then they get into office and they forget the people who sent them there in the first place. And I would only say, in the words of Senator Barry Goldwater, we need to send people to Washington who are going to represent the forgotten Americans, the middle-class taxpayers and families, the people who don't have lobbyists in Washington and aren't looking for loopholes in the law. If we can get back to that, and that's what Ronald Reagan did, he represented small businesses, the middle class, the entrepreneurs, get back to that philosophical conservatism and apply it to the serious problems facing us today, I think we'll be all right. But if we miss that opportunity, then it's going to be a real tough road ahead for the United States.
All right, and then where can my listeners, where can they find your book?
Well, they can go to tompaukin.com. It's TOMPAUKEN.com. See excerpts, reviews of the book, and also get it at Amazon.com. But there's a link to the Amazon site, and they can find out more about the book and see some of the reviews which I've received for the book.
Great. Tom, I really appreciate you taking the time to be with me today, and wish you best of luck with the book and everything else that you're doing.
Okay. Thank you very much, Don.